Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Milwaukee, start your engines. It's time to talk about all things racing. NASCAR, IndyCar, sports cars, and Formula One. This is the Final Inspection Show, presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. Now, here's your host, Steve Zocchi.
And welcome to the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by, of course, the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove and David Hobbs Honda. I'm Steve Zocchi in studio with Mitch Ross.
A lot has happened since I talked to you, Steve. Yes. I feel like it's been...
In fact, we got breaking news.
Really?
In the motorsports front. Yes, as reported by Robin Miller and Racer Magazine, Alexander Rossi, of course, who almost won the Indianapolis 500 this year and won the Indianapolis 500 in 2016, is re-upped with Andretti and Honda. There's some speculation that Roger Penske and Team Penske had made an offer to Rossi, who was to become a free agent at the end of the season. However, he has signed a contract extension to stay with Michael Andretti and Andretti Autosport and Honda. So we will talk more about that in the second hour with David Land, who will be calling into the show from Mid-Ohio. So interesting news there. But we got a full show today, bitch. A lot of stuff happening.
As usual.
In the sports world. Big win for the Brewers last night.
Huge.
And, you know,
big hit Ben Gamble, baby.
Well, and talk about a tale of two batters. You know, you got bases loaded. And they just call him up, and it's like,
Travis Shaw, yeah.
Travis Shaw just,
like, it was a storybook thing that just had fallen in his lap, and he didn't come through. And I mean, you know, obviously in baseball, you fail 75% of the time anyway. So it's tough to really get, you know, upset with the guy, but. You know, but that can come through at some point.
And it's the new Ben Gamble without the beard.
Right. Yeah. Not even phased.
Yeah. And
without the beard.
And, you know, there was a lot of speculation when the Brewers traded Domingo Santana to the Mariners. They bring in Ben Gamble. And I was like, hey, you know, Brewers know what they're doing. This ain't Brewers, you know, 20. I'm going to mention later in the show a Facebook memory from 2010. So I'll bring that up in
2010. Things, that was the Maka years. That
how
was
things have
right
changed.
The,
all right, you wanna?
I mean, those were two just weird years, I think, in Brewers history, where for whatever reason they just could not get to where they should have been, and they would come back in 2011 and obviously take off with a new manager. But the Ken Maka years did not go very well.
This is the memory from 2010,
sure,
almost 10 years ago.
Yeah, wow. How about that?
In fact, another memory from 6 years ago was when we got the new studio. And it's amazing how clean it was back then.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's not too bad today, but I've seen it in worse shape. That's
okay,
for sure.
Okay, here we go. That actually was 2009. It was 10 years ago.
Wow, 2009. Here we go.
And this is a tongue-in-cheek commentary on my part.
Do I need dump button ready?
No. Jeff Suppan has just poured 5 gallons of gasoline over his head and lit a match on the mound at Miller Park. Ken Maka just threw a rope over the ducting in the locker room, and Doug Melvin just tossed himself over the third deck railing. Other than that, everything is fine for the Brewers.
So there you go.
It wasn't a good day in Brewers history.
And now remember, this is coming off the 2008, the high of 2008, where you got, you know, CC Sabathia and made a magical run to the postseason, then ultimately ran out of gas. But, you know, you had a young Ryan Braun.
Mm-hmm.
You had a young Prince Fielder, a young prime Prince Fielder, and you had high expectations, and things just didn't really work out back then.
Soup is on. Remember that? Yeah. Just soup on.
Yeah.
That one didn't work out too well.
Yeah, I know. Good old soup on, baby.
Thankfully, David Stearns is doing a much better job these days. So we got a full show today. Lots to talk about.
It's great.
Yeah, there you go. Coming up next, we're going to talk with, of course, the Polish Pipe Bomb, Jeff Orlowski, my co-host. We'll be chatting with him and talk some NASCAR Cup Series news and notes coming up in the next few minutes here. And then we'll also chat with Dennis Michelson from D-Mike Media. Oz on the top of things in the world of NASCAR. We'll be talking a little bit of Cup news, but also Xfinity and Truck Series. Of course, with Pocono and Iowa once again. On Iowa, another race, consecutive races, which is very unusual. And I want to talk to Dennis Michelson about that. And before the end of the first hour, Mitch, we're going to have Kevin Olson on. He's got a blank look on this race. Kevin Olson, National Midget Hall of Fame driver, started racing in the 1970s. He won a race in Angel Park last week. First win in 19 years. So we're going to be talking with Kevin Olson, and a legend. Not only that, a pretty good interview. Interesting guy. So I'm looking forward to that. And then hour number two, we'll be talking to David Land from the YouTube channel, David Land, on some IndyCar. And then Brian Gopinski from Badger Midgets. We'll be chatting with him because we have the Norm Nelson Classic coming up at Angel Park coming up next week. Or this weekend, I should say. And, of course, Cornfest coming up, and Badger Midgets are kind of hitting their fourth gear, so to speak, in their schedule. And then we'll talk to Eddie Lapine because we got IMSA coming up to Road America next week. So we'll do a little preview of the sports car showcase that will be appearing at Road America. And then if we got some time left over, perhaps Mitch and I will do a pre-game show for the Brewers and Cubs series, a big series for the Brewer fans this weekend. So make sure you tune in to the Fan for the full 2 hours. Should be a lot of fun today. Mitch, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, as far as the pre, you could tell at Miller Park last night that there was a different energy.
It was almost a playoff. It's kind of a cliche, playoff atmosphere, but it really was. I mean,
it's a huge weekend, I think, for both teams because nobody knows whether they're buyers. I mean, the Cubs are probably buyers, right? But the Brewers are
in a spot. Cubs are always buyers.
Right. But the Brewers are in a spot where if they went out and got swept this weekend, I think they're done.
Yeah.
I mean, it was and by selling for the Brewers, I think it was maybe trade Yasmani Grandal. And that's
But if you ask everybody in that locker room, they're all in.
For
the
sure.
Players are, I mean, you could see that coming off the field last
and
night.
And that was a huge win last night, and I think it would be funny for the Brewers to go out and sweep the Cubs this weekend. It would just be typical of the season where you just don't know what to do. But if they sweep the Cubs, I mean, they are right there again. They have probably the division lead pending the Cardinals, who are just
those
on fire.
Pesty St. Louis Cardinals.
Yep. Just Paul Goldschmidt's picking it up. And
after year, do you think, down year, and well, maybe this will be the year. Maybe it'll be like 2, 3, 4 years. No, they keep reloading, and tip a hat to them. It's a good organization in St. Louis.
Yeah, and they just don't go away, you know.
They don't.
And they could be the ones that run away with the division. I don't know, but they are playing well now.
I don't think they're going to take the division, but I think they're going to be spoilers, and that's the Cincinnati Reds, because that's a team with a lot of pop, and they're kind of hit and miss,
but they faded a little bit, the Reds.
They can cause some damage, though. I mean, you can't just go into Cincinnati thinking, we're going to take two out of three.
I mean, the Brewers can't beat the Reds.
Exactly, so. Right. So, I mean, they're one of those they're that pesty team you're going to have to really fight. The record doesn't really show it, but they do have some quality parts in there. They don't have everything just yet.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's going to be an interesting weekend for the Brewers, and just to figure out to stay, either whether they're going to keep pace in the division or, you know, what they should do with the deadline. It's just been such a conversation and such a struggle to figure out where they are. And I think this is kind of your litmus test for the buyer, seller, the trade market. And the Giants are screwing it all up, I think, because they have, probably.
They were supposed to be sellers.
They have probably the two biggest pieces, biggest bullpen arm to get rid of and the biggest starter. And they keep winning, and they won another extra inning game last night. Six extra inning wins in 10 days. I think that's a baseball record.
It's amazing.
So, I mean, they keep screwing it all up because those guys should have by now made the trades and definitely had heavy discussions and sort of had the value of guys in the kind of the pecking order. That's how it works. But they're keeping it close to the vest with their situation. So if they keep winning, who knows what the heck's going to happen next week.
I'll tell you what, let's talk some NASCAR coming up with Jeff Orlowski of the Polish Pipon. When we come back, we'll talk some NASCAR at Pocono, brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove, and David Hobbs coming up next. And welcome back to the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove, and of course David Hobbs Honda. And joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline, it is the Polish Pipe Bomb, Jeff Orlowski. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Steve. How's it going?
Pretty good. We had some breaking news here. If you haven't heard, Alexander Rossi has re-upped with Andretti Autosport, and in a multi-year deal just announced by Robin Miller and Racer Magazine. And, he was being touted or being coveted by Team Penske, and a lot of people were thinking, well, it's a no-brainer. You should go to Team Penske. But Rossi is staying with Andretti. And, of course, my buddy just texted me, guess who will never win another Indy 500? So I responded, we got lunch on that. So I think he can. So,
well, you know, some people are happy where they're comfortable. And, if that's what he wanted, good for him.
Well, there's a lot of pressure at Team Penske, but it is a different organization, and it's not the greatest fit for everybody. And I know somebody who was offered a pretty primo crew job back in the day, and he turned them down because he knew Penske isn't for everybody, and it's just a different fit, just like maybe some guys wouldn't want to play for the Yankees because they think they're a little uptight with the, I don't know if they still have the facial hair thing. Do they still have the facial hair thing, Mitch? The Yankees? Do they still?
Oh, yeah. No.
Yeah, you still can't. Have, yeah, you cannot. See? And I for me personally, I just hate that kind of stuff, you know. But,
I think it's kind of, it's weird, but.
And Penske's real kind of like the Yankees that way. There's a certain way, and there's a certain, things that you have to do when you work for Team Penske, and maybe Rossi wasn't really comfortable with that. Nothing personal, it just wasn't the best fit, and I kind of agree with you with that, Jeff.
Yeah, Penske seems like the alpha out of the alphas, and, if you're not willing to sit there, live, breathe, eat, sleep, everything IndyCar, then it probably isn't the right fit for you. Mm-hmm. And, if you want to sit there and run IndyCars and still have a little life on the side, if you're raising a family and stuff like that, Penske might not be the place to go. But if you're young, if you're hungry, if that's all you live and die for, and you want to sit there and have the best chance of raising that championship trophy at the end of the season, I would go to Penske in a heartbeat.
Well, and coming up through the ranks, Joseph Newgarden, you saw him and what kind of driver he was and his personality and everything. And, for him, I was thinking he'd be perfect for Team Penske, and he has been. He's already won a championship, and, he'll probably win an Indy 500 in the next few couple of years, and he is a perfect fit for Team Penske. Rossi is he's kind of a how can I say this without being he's not clean cut, but I'm not saying he's a dirtbag either, but I mean just saying he's a little, he's kind of a fringe guy. I don't know how to describe it, but if you saw him on The Greatest Race when he was on with Connor Daly, I think you'd understand his personality in that. So
yeah, he doesn't exactly fit the Penske mold. It's
right.
Good for him to see that. And, he's probably going to be a happier driver, throughout his time at Andretti than he would be in Penske. So as far as personal happiness and stuff like that, good for him. He definitely probably sacrificed on-track success for the personal happiness. But, you know, there's people that they're not happy unless they have an equal balance. Dale Earnhardt Jr. comes to mind. You know, we all saw him leave the sport early. You can call it concussions. I call it he didn't have the heart. It wasn't in it. And, you know, obviously Dale Jr.'s happy, even though my ears bleed every week that I hear him.
You don't like it when he hits those high octaves?
Yeah, no, those high notes, it's nails on the chalkboard for me. But, you know, my voice changed when I was in sixth grade. So, you know, to each their own. But, you know, congratulations to Rossi and wish him all the success.
One guy that's kind of been on a tear lately is Kurt Busch. Been running well, winning races, running top fives, and now final practice is over. You got Eric Jones first, who's running for, you know, he's trying to keep his ride full-time next year. You got Kurt Busch in the one car, and the show favorite, Matt DiBurrito, in third place.
Yeah, that is a great top 10. Lots of good stories. You mentioned Eric Jones. You know, I think he's finished three or four out of the last five races in the top 3 to 5 at Pocono. So it's a track that he runs very, very well at. I do expect him to, you know, to be up there with 15 laps to go and a chance to win. So, you know, he can definitely save his ride and, you know, kind of put, you know, the early part of his career has been up and down. But he's coming to life and he's showing some signs now, and that's good in the position that he's in.
And William Byron in the 24 was fourth. And Hendrick seems, you know, there's been an uptick with Hendrick. So is this something, could Byron be the next Hendrick car in victory lane?
Well, he definitely, it seems like he has a lot better chance than Jimmy Johnson does. So would I be surprised? No, but I think it's going to be Alex Bowman again.
Okay. Alex Bowman, who is 21st in final practice, but was showing, I think he was looking well in the 10 lap groupings, which is actually a little more important. But
yeah.
Michael McDowell, too, was 10th, you know, proving that, you know, you don't have to just run well at Daytona or Talladega.
Yeah, he's definitely showing some skill on some different tracks. He's making that team better. Obviously, he's not in really good equipment. So it shouldn't be a surprise to anybody that he runs, you know, 20 to 25th every week. That's about the type of equipment that he's in. But I think that, especially lately, he's shown that he does finish better than what his car is. You'll take a 25th place car and come in 18th. And while 18th, you look at it and you're like, well, you know, it's 18th, but that's a win for those guys.
Yeah, and, you know, Kyle Larson, you know, he re-upped with Chip Ganassi. For us Kyle Larson fans, wasn't the best news that we wanted to hear. Once again, hitting a wall and just a horrible year for Kyle Larson, hasn't it been?
Yeah, it's been a complete and total disaster for Larson. You know, the kid's got all the promise in the world. Why he ever signed his name on that contract, I have no idea.
There's any other offers. I think it was the reason why he signed with Ganassi in the first place was because they were the only ones that offered him a ride without him bringing money in.
But the thing is that even if he would have had to do the Kurt Busch route, where you go and you run for a secondary team for a year, and then you get into a Stuart Haas or something like that, there will always be a ride for a guy like Kyle Larson, who, you know, he has shown that he can be competitive on all the different types of tracks. He is a true racer. And, you know, it's just sad because the longer this season goes, the more he struggles. I just wonder if this is going to be one of those stories kind of like, you know, Jamie McMurray, where it's like, well, what could have been with this guy? You know, they have talent. They never get into good equipment, and their career struggles because of it.
Yeah, and then, of course, last week in New Hampshire, once again, a good race in the Cup Series where you saw Kevin Harvick, who yours truly predicted as the winner, holding off a charging Denny Hamlin, who did a, I guess, a tasteful bump and run. Didn't have to crash the guy out. In hindsight, he maybe should have hit, he said he should have hit him more. I'm thinking, no, that's, you get one shot, that's, if you're going to do a bump and run, that's about as hard as you should have to hit the guy. Otherwise than that, it's just dirty pool, but that's my personal feeling. But what was your opinion on, especially the last 10 laps of that Loudon race last week?
Well, it was a phenomenal finish, and NASCAR kept their streak alive. It's now four out of the last six races that have had just great finishes, have been exciting to watch. You know, it puts the boredom of April and May racing kind of beside us and on the back burner, makes you not remember it quite so much. If I was Denny Hamlin, I definitely would have hit him a hell of a lot harder than he did. I would have done anything, you know, I had to do, especially when, you know, yes, it's Harvick and he was looking for his first win of the season, but it's not like he was wrecking a guy going after his first win. He wasn't going to wreck Guy Burrito, who was going after, you know, the first and only checkered flag he'd probably ever see in his career. This was, Kevin Harvick's a champion. He's, you know, he's well-established. If he would have wrecked out of that race, there's no way he's losing his ride or anything like that. I would have thrown him into the fence, but that's just me. Like, you know, I'd wreck my grandma to win a race.
Oh, I think, you know, it all depends on who it is and the, you know, and the circumstances. You know, we've talked about this before on the show, the Matt Kenseth situation with Tony Stewart, you know, and others in that, and then there's drivers that should have that didn't, like Ted Musgrave. But in this case, you have two guys that have been in victory lane many, many times. But, I mean, you know, Denny Hamlin, yeah, they all say in the Cup Series, they police it by, I run the guy, you know, how he's run me. So, you know, Denny Hamlin didn't take him out, but he already has, you know, he's got a couple wins. He doesn't – now, maybe he might be in a situation, especially like a track like Dover or something later in the year, where he gets himself in trouble, where Keller Harvick actually gives him a break now instead of taking him out and crashing him out. So, you know, it's one of those things where it may pay – it actually may pay, you know, dividends during the playoffs when you kind of really need that break.
Well, that's what Denny Hamlin is looking for. He said in a couple interviews this week that you know, the fact that he didn't wreck Harvick, you know, it's trying to help his reputation a little bit, but B, it kind of buys him one where if he does have to throw somebody into the wall in the playoffs or something like that, it's not going to be, oh, same old Denny. It's going to be, well, you know, he had to do it to advance in the playoffs or whatever the excuse is going to be. So he definitely, you know, I think Harvick owes him, but I think it was definitely a bigger picture type move than if he would have just sat there and put him in the wall to win last week.
Talking with Jeff Orlowski, the Polish Pipe on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. Jeff, of course, can be heard on the Final Inspection Show, usually as my co-host, but is had another assignment. He's away on assignment.
Yeah, well, I wish I was in studio because we're deep cleaning the house today. So this is a pleasant break, and you know, I'm very glad that the show is going to be on until 6 o'clock tonight straight, and I'll be on the whole time. So this works out wonderful.
Hey, this is from speedsport.com, our friends there, and Ralph Shaheen. Officials from Pocono Raceway NASCAR revealed several details for the planned 2020 Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series doubleheader. The Sunday, June 28th portion of the doubleheader will be 350 miles and/or 140 laps. The first portion of the doubleheader on Saturday, June 27th, will likely be the same length, but officials indicated further conversation needs to take place. Qualifying for the first race of the weekend will take place on the Friday prior. However, the field for the second race, I like this, will be set by inverting the lead lap finishers from the first race. Any cars a lap down from Saturday's race will then start behind those cars who finished on the lead lap. The weekend is also scheduled to include the NASCAR Xfinity Series and Gander Outdoor Truck Series. The Xfinity Series race will take place on June 28th, and the Truck Series race will be on the 27th. So you're going to have a double, basically two races, or you'll have two days. So you'll have a truck race and a cup race on Saturday, and then the following day you're going to have an Xfinity race and a cup race on the same day. Is that something you'd be interested in seeing if you're a NASCAR fan, Jeff?
Interested? No. It's still Pocono, so it's not the most exciting racing in the world. Probably one of my least favorite tracks on the schedule, but I like it, and I like that they're doing it all in one weekend. I like the double race weekend. I like the fact that there's going to be Xfinity and Cup on the same day. Like you, I am a big fan with inverting the lead lap cars to have your starting order for the second race. I think what's going to make that interesting is for the clash the next February, where I think if you've got two guys, say you've got Michael McDowell and a Matt DiBurrito, and they are the last two cars on the lead lap, is there showmanship where one guy just, you know, lets off the gas and lets the other guy pass him to be the last car on the lead lap and start from the pole, and then he gets into the clash the following February?
Interesting.
I think there could be some gamesmanship back there. I love it. I hope that NASCAR does not make it where if you do start from the pole in the second Pocono, that does not count for the clash. I think if they do that, they're missing an opportunity to, A, get a driver that doesn't get the publicity and the, you know, so-called notoriety that they deserve. I think it is a fantastic opportunity for drivers that are on these underfunded teams and stuff like that to get their name out there, to get talked about, to get camera time, so their sponsors see themselves on the broadcast and can say, NASCAR is a good investment. I am going to invest for years to come. And hopefully it brings back a bunch of these companies that have left and we start getting a lot more money back into this sport.
Sounds good. It is that time for predictions on the Final Inspection Show. So, Jeff, let's see here. What do you got for a Pocono Cup Series?
Give me Eric Jones.
Ooh, I like that. And then we'll just do Iowa. We're not going to do Truck Series. We'll do Iowa, Xfinity. What do you like?
I'm going to go with Cindric, my boy.
Okay. And then Mid-Ohio IndyCar.
Oh, man. Well, when I think of Mid-Ohio, I definitely think of Pagano. Lots of French in Mid-Ohio. I have no idea. I'll go Pagano.
Okay, very good. Jeff, thank you so much, and we look forward to seeing you next week.
All right, boys. Have a great weekend, and enjoy the racing.
All right, thanks, buddy. That's Jeff Orlowski joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline.
Looking to buy, build, renovate, or refinance in 2019? Look no further and call Great Midwest Bank today. Great Midwest Bank, providing simply local, common-sense lending to your community since 1935.
Coming up next on the Final Inspection Show, we'll talk to Dennis Michelson about the Truck Series and the Xfinity Series in NASCAR. Coming up next on the Final Inspection Show.
Final Inspection. Final Inspection. Now, Dennis Michelson of D-Mike Media is here to give us the inside track on NASCAR and the world of short track racing.
And welcome back to the Final Inspection Show. And yes, joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline, it is Dennis Michelson from D-Mike Media. Welcome to the show, Dennis.
Z-Man, it's good to be here.
Oh, it's a pleasure to chat with you, sir. And switching our attention to Iowa in the Xfinity Series, you could almost call it a doubleheader, consecutive races at Iowa, IndyCar Series, and now the Xfinity Series. How stressful is that for a racetrack?
Oh, my goodness. After what they went through with the IndyCar race, not finishing until the wee hours of the morning, it's that puts a lot of stress on all the people that are working at the track to then try to come back again in the middle of thunderstorm season and try to get a race in just really quick back to back. It does put a little bit of pressure on the infrastructure, but hey, at least the bathrooms are clean.
This is true. This is true. And Christopher Bell won the Busch Pole for the U.S. Cellular 250 Xfinity race. And it's his second at Iowa, his 10th in his career, and Chase Briscoe will start second. Christopher Bell, this has to be his last year in Xfinity, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. There's no way that he would even dare sticking around for another season. And he brings enough in the way of sponsorship with him and sponsors that like him that, if he didn't get the opportunity to move up to the next level, with his current team, there will be other teams coming a calling. So this is a case of, protect your investment at this point.
And a kind of embarrassing moment in qualifying, especially a situation for a driver like this, Morgan Shepherd, God bless him, still driving. And let's face it, he's a field filler at this point. He likes being at the track. The guy is 70 years old, but he could run circles around, both of us, the physical shape that he's in. But unfortunately, he left the pits with the backup steering wheel, whatever you want to call it, the crew steering wheel, on the car, and it's rolling down the backstretch. NASCAR does not like situations like that, does it?
No, they whenever a crew screws up and, forces a little adjustment there to Steph, they sort of take not kindly to that. But how many times over the years have you seen cars leave, the pit area and there's a wrench on the back, of the mm-hmm. car, or there's some tools that are there or whatever. It happens. It's just unfortunate. And, I love seeing him at the racetrack because you can always count on the morning of qualifying, for instance, you'll see him on roller skates going up and down pit lane at some point. It's just hilarious. But the guy's loving life, and I wish I had half his energy.
Mm-hmm. And, for those who may not know, a lot of these, especially the smaller teams, they have very limited full-time crew members. And most of the at least I would say at least a third half of the field in the Xfinity side and probably on the truck side, those are pickup guys that they pick up at the racetrack to do pit stops, isn't it?
Yeah, and until NASCAR really buckled down on this, they used to do it sort of like how ARCA used to do it. A lot of the back marker or field filler teams for ARCA used to share a pit crew between two guys, and whoever was farther up in the lineup, that's who got the pit first, and then the other guy would come in and the crew would take care of them at the same time. They used to do some of that on the at that time the Busch Series side as well, but NASCAR has kind of stomped that one out, and now a team like Morgan Shepherd's and those kinds of teams, they might have three guys that are at the track.
Sure.
There are actual, guys that work on the car, and the rest, they are just, friends of family sometimes who have been trained to do those jobs. And, like I said, in ARCA and in NASCAR, it wasn't uncommon. I got asked one time when I was there covering races media to go over the wall for one of the ARCA teams. Mm-hmm. That's how crazy it used to get if you knew teams that were out there. But NASCAR's kind of cracked down on that, and NASCAR's sort of sharing the track with the K&N series this week, so some of those guys are staying over to pit cars as well. So it gets pretty weird when you're talking some of those back of the field teams, because they just don't have the budget to have a pit crew the way the front running teams. They'll have their mechanics working on the team, and then they'll fly in their crew guys just on race day. So the smaller teams certainly can't afford to, even have a full team in many cases.
Yeah, Chase Briscoe, outside front row, Indiana sprint car driver, It's finally starting to click now with the heavier stock cars and that. He'll be Ford supported driver. It'll be interesting to see how he does. But another driver, and I'd been kind of critical of him. He wrecks a lot of cars, but now it looks like maybe the light's going off now for him, and that's Brandon Jones, who certainly has been putting together some decent races here, hasn't he?
Yeah, when Brandon Jones first hit the series, he was really, really quick, but you could always count on him spinning. I mean, mm-hmm. It's like now how we joke about Natalie Decker in the truck series. You know, when is she going to crash? It's not a matter of, you know, if she's going to crash, it's what lap is the first spin coming up. And that was kind of his deal as well. He was very fast right from the time he arrived in NASCAR, but he was not the steadiest, not the surest driver, but he is starting to get it. You know, that's, I'm always reminded of a great basketball coach from the great city of Milwaukee with the Marquette Warriors years ago.
Al McGuire, yeah.
Yep, he used to say the greatest thing about freshmen, they become sophomores. Same thing with race car drivers. The greatest thing about young race car drivers is they finally get it. I mean, how many times do we say this along the way? You know, Ross Chastain, turn back to when he first arrived in NASCAR. Mm-hmm. He wasn't a consistent driver. Now the guy's proven himself as to being one of the best drivers in the lower divisions. Same with Justin Haley. When he first came, he was fast, but he was also known to be, you know, a little inconsistent. And now he's really doing well. So it takes experience. I don't care how great of a driver you are. I don't care if you're Christopher Bell running for one of the top teams, or a guy farther down the order, just, you know, making it from race to race with a smaller team. When you first get to this level, it's just like moving up like a baseball player. Triple-A to the majors is one step up in the hierarchy of the sport, but it's like 100 times tougher to stay at that major league level. Same thing with every step up the NASCAR ladder. When you're just racing those wheeling series stuff at your local short track for wheeling, you know, points in NASCAR, you move up to, you know, you might win 10 races in a year at your short track. You move up to K&N, and all of a sudden you're lucky if you're getting 10 top 10 finishes your first season. It's a huge jump up between the weekly stuff and the regional. Then from the K&N to, say, the truck series, that's a big jump. And from the trucks to Xfinity is a big jump. But that biggest jump is from Xfinity to Cup. You are now moving up to the major leagues, and it is very, very tough. But each step along the way, you have to kind of relearn what you're doing. You know, we see that in every sport along the way, and same thing's true in racing, too.
Talking to Dennis Michelson from D-Mike Media and on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. Switching gears now, going back to Pocono Raceway, where the truck series is at. Austin Hill in the 16 and the Shiggy Hitachi Toyotas on the pole. Ross Chastain in the front row. We got Stuart Friesen and Brett Moffitt, who won the championship last year in the 16 car. That's on the pole with Austin Hill. And then Sheldon Creed in the 2 car, in my opinion, the most exciting guy in the truck series at this point. Harrison Burton, of course. And I want to talk about Harrison Burton last week with the Paul Menard situation. We were tweeting about that last week. What, for those who may not watch it, Harrison Burton had an excellent opportunity in a Joe Gibbs car and in the 18 car, and was taken out by Paul Menard in the Xfinity race, which I didn't like, because my feeling is, hey, Menard, you're dropping down the series, you know. And he didn't like it because he said that Burton was getting into him. And so give us your opinion on that one, Dennis, please.
He was flat out dumped. That was a nasty, dirty move. And I, you know, here's the thing is, if a part-timer in the Cup Series, a guy who's running Xfinity or trucks full-time, or even a guy who's running Cup full-time but not running for playoff points, like a Ross Chastain would have done the same thing to a Paul Menard, in the cup level, you'd never hear the end of it. So when you're a cup guy, when you are just dropping down, you're the visitor in town. You are not, you know, you're not supposed to, you know, just make a mess of things. And I don't know. I could see why he might be a little bit miffed because he was raced good and hard, but he wasn't raced dirty by Harrison Burton on that restart. He was just raced hard. Last time I looked, I kind of thought that was your job as a young racer, was to race hard every time. He didn't run Menard dirty. And in fact, if you look at the replay, and, you know, you look at it from both guys' point of view, he cut down on Harrison Burton. So Harrison Burton didn't have anywhere else to go. He was already down as far on the track, as far low as on the track as he could get. So there really wasn't anything for him to do. And then the return, you know, so this is like, I give you a little tap, I'm giving you a big shove. You know, it's, you know, like somebody slaps you and you deck them with a right cross. It just doesn't make any sense. It was a payback that far exceeded,
yes,
the, you know, any roughing up that was perceived. Even if I put my Paul Menard fan hat on, because I love Paul Menard. I think he gets a bad rap too often. I could see how he'd be miffed. I could see how he might want to go in there and crowd him the next time he gets a chance. But he flat hooked him. And I don't like this hook and run stuff. To me, I could go out there and show that little bit of talent. You know, if you're a professional NASCAR driver, if you want to get on his back bumper and you just want to rough him up a little bit, want to give him a rough ride, that's fine. That would be a proper payback. But he flat out dumped him. What I didn't understand was, how did Harrison Burton keep his cool?
Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't have.
Oh, Jeff Burton, too. Have. I mean, I posted on Facebook. I said, kudos to Jeff Burton, because I would have charged out of the booth. I would have grabbed a crowbar and went after him. Or Kim Burton too. I'm surprised Kim Burton didn't jump up on pit road and start sticking her high heels into his hood, because she gets all worked up during the races too, watching her son. But I mean, yeah, it's just a frustrating situation. There's a time and place for everything, but this is a situation. It's so tough to get opportunities in any type of racing, much less NASCAR now. You know, the money is so tight and everything, and here's an opportunity for him to be in a good ride and kind of showcase yourself. And you know, what got me mad is, here you're not screwing a guy's race. You're kind of screwing up his career by doing that. And that's what got me worked up.
Yeah, and I've watched Harrison Burton all the way up through the short track ranks to regional touring, and he has developed a reputation, much like his dad, of being a very clean racer. It's not like this guy goes around just, you know, shoving his back bumper into guys. So he's got a reputation, and I don't care how long or how few races you've got in this business. Everybody in the garage area knows your reputation very clearly, very quickly. So Menard also, when he gets roughed up by him or, you know, run hard on that restart, he knows this is a kid that is not known for throwing his car around. He's actually been a kind of an old school racer of, you know, racing hard. You know, he's nobody's weenie. He's not going to go out there and just, you know, roll over on guys. But he doesn't have that reputation of being a rough racer, and he was done wrong. You know, he really was done wrong in this case. And, you know, I kind of lost a little respect for Paul Menard, because this is a guy who, you know, I don't want to say he's had it handed to him, but his path to the top has been a little easier than Harrison Burton's. And he knows when you're in one of those cars at the elite level of any series, and you're only going to get a handful of starts in there, those are the races that are more important. If he was just filling out the field with a middle-ranking team and gets roughed up and turned, that's a whole different story. But this was a chance for Harrison Burton with all the eyes on him, and he just flat-out got dumped. But I will say this, you knew he was in the race, and you knew he was racing hard, I was impressed with the kid's talent. I thought they were rushing this kid up the ladder a little too quick. After last week, I'm like, this kid's got it. He should be in a top ride right now. He should be in a Christopher Bell-type ride full-time for next season because this kid's got it.
All right, it's that time of the show. We got to do predictions. Dennis, who do you like at Mid-Ohio in the IndyCar race?
Ooh, Mid-Ohio. I'm going to take Will Power.
Will Power. And then Iowa for the Xfinity.
I'm going to take Christopher Bell.
All right. And the big race Sunday at Pocono.
I'm going to take Martin Truex Jr. this week. And I've got as positive a feeling about him as I did Harvick last week.
So all right, very good. Well, Dennis, we certainly appreciate you coming on the show and look forward to chatting with you next week. And what's the latest at DMAC Media?
Oh, getting all the fantasy football stuff together. Now riding for the folks at FakePigskin.com. How cool of a name is that for a website? Still over at Flurry Sports and also collaborating with folks at FFStatistics.com. So very busy this time of the year with fantasy football stuff. Remember, fantasy football is a weekly game, not a yearly game. You need weekly tools, and the only ones you'll get is from DMI over at FakePigskin.com.
All right. Looks like we're going to have you on the Green and Gold podcast with Jeff and myself. So looking forward to that.
I would love to do that because I've got a lot of good feelings about this Green Bay Packers team. You know, even though I share a house with a Bears fan, I got to tell you, I'm really looking at the Packers as being a real strong season coming up.
All right. Very good. Dennis, we appreciate it. We'll chat with you next week.
All right, Z-Man, be good.
All right, thanks, Dennis. Coming up next on the Final Inspection Show, we're going to talk to National Midget Hall of Fame race car driver Kevin Olsen. Coming up next on the Final Inspection Show.
This is Final Inspection with Steve Zocchi.
Presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove.
On 105.7 FM, The Fan.
And welcome back to the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove, along with David Hobbs Honda. And joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline, it is Kevin Olsen. Kevin, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Hey, this is pretty cool. So Kevin Olsen, for those who might not be aware, a five-time Badger Midget Champion, two-time USAC Midget Champion, also in the USAC Hall of Fame, along with the National Midget Hall of Fame. And in a time of his career that a lot of people are saying, hey, maybe you should retire, you actually won a race last week at Angel Park. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I think for the last 20 to 30 years, people have been telling me I better retire because I'll be 100 years old, I believe, this year. But actually 68, just feel like 100. But it's been a long time without the dry spell, but we were fortunate enough to be able to win last week at Sun Prairie, which is kind of the place that I grew up around.
So how did this come together with you and car owner Don Clevin and you've been running the full series so far, and how's the season been progressing for you?
Well, you know, I think Donnie had pity for an old man is what it kind of amounted to, you know, and wanted to try to give me a chance to win another one, which was kind of my goal. I mean, I've won over 100 midget races, or you know, over the career. This is my 50th year of racing midgets, and I just really wanted to win one more at Sun Prairie. You know, it's kind of like the drug addict; he always has to have one more. I had to win one more, and it kind of took me all this time to do it. But now, you know, I can fall over dead tonight, and I'll be all right. You know, I'll be happy.
You started at a time almost when I think roll cages were mandated, 1970. Yeah. That's when you started. But did you drive an Offenhauser-powered midget?
Oh, yeah. I drove quite a few of them.
Okay.
In fact, I drove a car without a roll, with just a roll bar briefly, and then kind of run just about all the different engines there are. But, you know, through the years, things have progressed so much technically with these cars that they're so good nowadays that
it's right up there with it.
Well, you know, I mean, I started at Angel Park, and it's just been a place that we automatically, you get up Sunday morning, your body knows you got to go to Angel Park, you know, because you've done it for so long. But, yeah, it's got to be, if not my favorite, one of the favorite. I always loved going to Hale's Corners also. That was always a lot of fun. And, you know, through the years at Angel Park, my kids have all grown up there, and I've lost a few friends there that were killed in race cars. You know, I've had the highlights and the highest of highs and the lowest of lows there, but it's just kind of like I guess would be my home track. But I certainly love the Sun Prairie people and the track, that's for sure.
And that was your 47th career feature victory at Angel Park, which places you third place on the all-time feature win list. And it was your first at the track since September 6th, 1998. And I've seen you race out there since then, too, and you've been in a variety of cars. But it seems like this is a good mesh for you with you and Donnie, isn't it?
Oh, it's great. He's the greatest, you know, guy. Never gets upset when I make all my mistakes, and never, you know, he's just happy to be part of the racing thing. And I you couldn't ask for a better guy, and he's got a great car. I mean, for a guy like me, the last 20 years or so at my age, it's just been hard to find a decent ride. And, you know, with Donnie, I got the best of everything there. And, you know, I'm just so fortunate to have been able to meet up with him. And he's not only a good friend, but, I mean, just a great car owner. Great car owner.
And have you've raced against a who's who of midget racing over the years. Give me a couple of drivers that really kind of stick out for you.
Well, I'll be honest with you. Excuse me. I've raced with guys like Mal Kenyon, Rich Vogler, Bob Wenny, Sleepy Trip, Jeff Gordon. I was teammates with Jeff Gordon in Australia back in 1990. Boy, you name it. AJ Foyt ran with us one time in Terre Haute, and Johnny Rutherford. Really, it's just about anybody we've crossed paths at one time or another. Now, I'm not saying I beat them all. I mean, but I raced with them anyways, but it's just been a great run for me. Quite a neat deal to spend your whole life doing what you want to do.
It certainly is, and just a potpourri of car owners too. Who are some of the car owners that helped you along the way?
Oh my gosh, just so many of them. I mean, I've probably driven for over 100 car owners through the years, but you know, I run from everybody, like with Denny Lamers, of course, up in Appleton, we won the Badger Championship with, and Paul Kruger, who won races back in the 60s, and Lee Carey, and Donnie Clevin, it's kind of hard for me just to pull, just if you name somebody, I've probably driven for Mal Kenyon, I drove for, and Jim Fiskus out of Fitchburg, we drove for, just about anybody that's had a race car, I've had a chance. And I got fired from all of them, by the way.
And one of my favorite books that you came out with a couple years ago was your Cages Are for Monkeys, Unleashed with Kevin Olsen, that you did with Lou Boyd. And Lou Boyd's a good guy with his Coastal 181 website. Make sure you check out Coastal181.com, not only for Kevin's book, which I guess is going to be coming back in February, but also still Steve Zottke DVDs from the Milwaukee Mallard are also available there. But not only you, but your brother Lauren Olson has a pretty cool book on midget racing in Wisconsin, doesn't he?
He sure does. Lauren is one of those guys that probably is a historian with open wheel midgets and racing, probably more than anybody I can think of in the world, really. The other day I was down at Bob Tattersall, who was a famous midget racer in the old days.
Yep.
His wife, I met up with her, and they were talking about a little track in Streeter, Illinois. It was called Third Street Speedway. They only lasted 2 years in 48 and 49. And she said, look, the Knoxville Raceway was interested in getting some facts about it. They never even heard about it. You know, I called Lauren right on the spot, and he had 2 years of that little obscure track, you know, that had all the results. So, I mean, he's really got a tremendous history of midget racing and just about any kind of racing.
Yeah, so make sure you check out Coastal181.com and Lauren's book, which was Kevin's brother. It's Midgets of Wisconsin, an excellent book on the history of the mighty midgets in Wisconsin. And then what's the latest on your book? Now, you've sold so many of them, Kevin, that they've gone out of print, haven't they?
Yeah. I think we're going to – there's a good chance we're going to do another one. This one was called Cages Are for Monkeys, and it's kind of a my history of racing, which is probably not anybody like anybody else's, because I've always seemed to be the guy that is in the wrong spot at the wrong time, or, you know, just I like to drink a few drinks now and then through the years, and, you know, sometimes it's got me in trouble, and you know, the history of racing that I did and the injuries. I broke my neck in C1 and 2. I broke my back in T3, 4, and 5. I spent 2 months in a burn unit. I got pretty much broken ribs, broken whatever, you know, and it's kind of interesting for, you know, a derelict like me to be able to make the Hall of Fame anyway, you know.
It certainly is. Well, Kevin, we certainly appreciate you joining the show, and make sure you check out Coastal181.com and also by Amazon, too, for Kevin's book, and we appreciate it, and we look forward to seeing you out at Angel Park.
Well, we'll be there probably until they run me out, so thanks for calling, and boy, it's been a great week for me. It's just been one of the best weeks of my life, just for all the people calling, and I had Johnny Rutherford call me, and Parnelli Jones, and, not Parnelli, but just about anybody and everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was pretty neat, so for a Sunbury race. So thank you, Steve, and good luck to you guys, too.
All right, thank you. It's Kevin Olson joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline.
Looking to buy, build, renovate, or refinance in 2019? Look no further and call Great Midwest Bank today. Great Midwest Bank, providing simply local common sense lending to your community since 1935.
We'll take a quick break here, and then after a couple commercials and the sports flash, we'll have David Land talking IndyCar from Mid-Ohio coming up next on the Final Inspection Show. Step
up, step up, step up, yeah. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.